hearing for the House Committee of Education for Monday, February 11, 2008. Welcome, members. Good to see you. We'll be joined by our straggling colleagues here in the next few minutes. And I'd like to remind members and members of the audience to please turn off cell phones, BlackBerries, PDAs, etc., in deference to our sound system. We're going to open an informational hearing on motor coaches and use of charter buses. Vice Chair Wisman had requested that we look into this issue after it came up this school year. And we have Morgan Allen and Deborah Lincoln from the department here to start us off, I believe, to give us kind of an overview of where we are in the situation. Ms. Smith, we can just put you on the sheet here if you'd like.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committees. For the record, Morgan Allen with the Department of Education. And I'll get started and let my colleagues, who are the true experts on school buses and pupil transportation, field the tough questions so I have a great job this afternoon. So, coming around to you right now are going to be a couple documents, my written testimony, which I'll summarize. A copy of the list of school districts that have asked for and received waivers to use motor coaches, of which there are now 53 as of February 8th, and I believe we just added one today, so there might be 54. And a copy of a proposed permanent Oregon administrative rule relating to motor coaches. So to give a little bit of background, on October 9th, the Oregon Department of Education notified school districts that the motor coach buses, the Greyhound-type buses, did not meet safety standards set for Oregon school activity buses, and school districts that chose to use those motor coaches would be out of compliance with both statute and rule. We made this notification based on advice we received from the Oregon Department of Justice. Since then, the department further consulted with DOJ and members of the State Board of Education, and they proposed the following actions which have taken place and are in process. The first was they asked the department to prepare a temporary rule for adoption by the State Board to allow a variance for the standards for school activity vehicles that gives the department the opportunity to place safety-related requirements on school districts. And this variance would be in effect for 6 months. And then the State Board of Education asked the department to convene an advisory group to continue to work towards a permanent solution around the issue of motor coaches. So on October 18th of last fall, the State Board of Education passed an emergency rule on a vote of 6-1, modifying OAR 581-053-5556, which allowed districts to basically send a letter to the department to ask for a variance to use motor coaches. The superintendent has the authority to grant those variances, and the requesting or school districts may use those motor coaches as school activity vehicles once that variance is granted. So I've included in my testimony the entirety of the temporary rule is at the bottom of page 1 and goes on to the top of page 2. And to give a couple other quick updates, since the rule went into effect on the 18th, again, we've now had 54 school districts ask for a waiver variance to use motor coaches. And you should have that list coming around to you with all those school districts. To date, we have not denied a district. All the districts have met the specifications and requirements laid out in the temporary rule. And our Director of Pupil Transportation, Deborah Lincoln, who's with me here today, has been heading up a work group that, again, as I said, was requested to be put together by the State Board of Education to study this issue. And the work group included, I believe you should have possibly a copy of that too, the work group included ODE, COSA, OSBA, OSEA, several school districts, and representatives from First Students and many of the motor coach carrier companies. And they were charged with coming up with a permanent rule, which is being passed around as well. There is going to be a public hearing on that rule on the 27th of February, and it is tentatively, it has not been officially scheduled yet, but it's tentatively scheduled to be reviewed and heard by the State Board of Education in March. So with that, Deborah and I will be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Thank you very much. Mr. Allen, any questions from the committee? Mr. Allen, Vice Chair Wisman, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Allen. You went over it real quick, and that was good. But what I'm reading here is that it sounds like what we've done is we've continued what we were doing. Is that correct? Did it change? Because you'd issued the, these people were issued the approval before. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that is Representative Wisner. That's not correct, and I'll let Deborah jump in and explain that.
For the record, Deborah Lincoln, Department of Education. If I understand your question correctly, the change has occurred between the temporary rule and the permanent rule, or I guess I need more clarification.
Chair,
please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lincoln, what I thought you said before in the early in Mr. Allen's testimony, we had a procedure, and we stopped that procedure where people were using it, and now we've said, okay, here's the rules, but are the different rules and what they were, how were they doing it before, I guess, is the basic question. It seemed like we're doing the same thing.
Okay, Chair Buckley.
I must be wrong.
Representative Wisnett, I'm going to back up and explain a little bit before. The legislature has given the authority to the Department of Education to write construction standards and driver qualifications for school bus drivers. What has happened is we spelled out specifically the qualifications for drivers and buses, but motor coaches, the Greyhound type, are not included in those standards. Under motor carrier, Chapter 825, it specifically exempts when they transport school children because that authority was given to the Department of Education. So there's a gap there, so that vehicle was not included, and so that they couldn't use it for transportation of students. So when the board met in October, they gave us the authority to temporarily issue variances, and that's what we have done for the last 6 months or 5 months. We've been issuing variances. It was during that time, while the temporary rule was in place, that we have written or drafted the final rules, which you should have a copy of it. Now, is that, am I answering your question?
Clarification. Thank you, Mr.
Chair.
So, but before October and the past, last year, 2 years, so they were doing this all illegally? It was not, they were using private carriers illegally?
Well, Chair Buckley, Representative Wisner, if I could answer that in a more politically correct way. I think that they probably thought it was legal. Otherwise, they wouldn't have done it. And it was a very complicated issue, and that's why we sought an opinion from DOJ, and they agreed that they probably should not be using those vehicles. And when we found that out, we, of course, informed districts that they shouldn't use them. To my knowledge, they all stopped using them and have gone through the variance process. So I don't think that anybody's chosen to do anything illegally.
Please. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Politically correct, Mrs. Lincoln. I've known you for a few years, and your testimony and your expertise I'm not going to question. But had we had some accidents or something surfaced that said, hey, we better look at this or make it legal? Or
what, if I could answer that, Chair Buckley, Representative Wisner. Yes, what happened is a private school purchased or was given a motor coach. At that time, they wanted to put it into our system to be under our regulatory authority. Because it didn't meet the standards, we said no. It was at that time they requested a variance, and we found ourselves in this very precarious position if we said yes, and here the statute didn't allow it for the other purposes, so that's why we sought more legal opinion. There have been some incidents, nothing involving fatalities or injuries, but there was an accident, motor coach that caught on fire that was in the press and on the TV, the band students from North Clackamas, and they lost all their instruments. And but we have not had any fatalities here in Oregon. There have been fatalities across the nation in motor coaches involving students.
Please. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we had a practice that was going on, politically correct or incorrect or legal or not legal, but because this one school district put a, was it contract or was it driven by union drivers or state employees?
Chair Buckley, Representative Wisnett, it was not a contracted employee. It was a school district employee.
Okay,
this was a private school. But it was an employee of the private school that was going to drive it.
And so they said, well, you can't allow sports teams to use charter buses, and we
that's
can't use it for...
Exactly
that's
what they said.
That's what made the problem.
Yes, that's exactly what they said.
Okay. All right. Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Of course, where I live, the big issue, and I had parents outside of Snowball, this was my hottest topic when I got back in this beginning of the year. And I had parents calling me up, you can't do this, you can't do this. So it sounds like the rules and the system we have back in place now are going to allow the sports teams to continue to use charter buses. You've got rules to be sure those charter buses that are contracted are safe as possible. And I did get in, I'll try to go through. You might want to comment, because I guess one of the things, and again, I've heard your testimony about school buses and seat belts and how they're constructed, and I guess one of the issues was the charter buses are not as reinforced ceilings as school buses, but they do have seat belts, but no, not always. Okay. So if you can comment on those things, I just went over real quick.
Chair Buckley, Representative Winsnett, you want me to comment on the difference between the construction standards of school buses?
I'd like to ask that. Sure, on that question. I'd like to know what makes school buses safe. They don't particularly seem safe to me.
Well, but Mr. Chair, I've been through this lecture.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is looks like we're okay now in the school districts that want to use those for athletic teams. You've got rules and control now that with the Department of Education that's going to make this happen, but be concerned about the safety of the students.
I think in my testimony to the State Board, what I shared is that school buses are, of course, the safest form of transportation, and NHTSA has stated that. There is annually about 6 fatalities in school buses throughout the United States. There are 14 on average in motor coaches. And part of the differences between motor coaches and school buses that would affect students is the fact that their windows can be gaping holes, so in an accident they don't meet those same retention standards. The same with the seating, it doesn't make that compartmentalization so that the student stays within the compartment. Neither vehicle has seat belts or is required to have seat belts installed in it. I think that one of the reasons that the committee that we formed wanted to put together rules so that they could be allowed the issues that they wanted to cover was the driver themselves. And I think we covered that in the driver. The driver has to meet the same criminal background check as the school bus driver. We're going to be giving them a certificate through our office. We're going to be looking at their driving record. We're going to be looking at their criminal record. We've done some other things to the vehicle itself to make sure that the vehicle, for example, we want to improve the fire hardening over the duals, which is an area where the rear tires would occasionally catch on fire. So we've made some requirements there for districts. We've also required some safety instructions, so before departure, the students get evacuation training, much like an airline. You know, here's the windows, this is how you get out. We've also put some practices in places for them that they wouldn't stand up, the students wouldn't stand up during traffic circumstances where the coach is traveling on twisty, turny roads, I think we say that, and that they're supposed to use the hand grips on the back of the seats, and they shouldn't be out of their seat any more than necessary. So, you know, I think we've put some things in place like that. We also are requiring that a carrier kind of register with us so that we can make sure that it's a carrier that has an approved safety rating, and we'll be monitoring that also. So I think that we've done a good compromise here. We involved a lot of people to make sure that the Motor Coach Association was happy with this, the contractors, the school districts. And so I think we've blended a good group, and I think it's going to improve safety and improve the transportation.
Thank you, Representative Lim.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And could you explain to me what are the variances?
Chair Buckley, Representative Lim, a variance is a request or a deviation from the rules.
Yes.
And so they have requested a variance not use a school bus, to use a motor coach. And we asked them to provide us with their USDOT number, their insurance, proof of insurance, their safety rating, and the reason why they want to have this transportation instead of school buses.
Okay. Clarification, please, Chair. Do you have any set written variations? Am I clear my questions?
Mr. Chair, we examine each waiver variance request on a case-by-case basis, and if they meet the specifications laid out in the administrative rule, we have the authority to grant it.
Okay.
So we get different requests. Most common request, though, is for transporting students between interscholastic activities or other after-school type activities.
Okay. Thank you.
And if I could just clarify, occasionally we get other requests for variances, like they would like to put a wind deflector on the back of the bus. Maybe they have heavy snow. We have a written standard of what the bus must meet. And so if they don't want that for some particular reason, as long as it doesn't compromise safety, we have allowed them to do that.
Okay. Just one more question.
Please, Representative.
And for instance, the school buses. And usually, in average sense, how old are they? And how many miles is the drivable, usually?
Chair Buckley, Representative Lim, that's a big question.
You can give me a political answer.
Okay, I'll give you a political answer. In Oregon, we have about 5,000 school buses, and we just passed last legislative session a rule that would not allow a bus that's older than 1976. Set 1977, and we have five in the state right now, but they'll be going away in August. But in that 5,000, we're going to have the age is going to be from now, from 1978 to 2008. And as far as the number of miles, they could certainly travel 300,000.
Okay.
Depends on the care, depends on the road, depends on the students.
All right, just one more question, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
Even though it could be 30 years old, 37 years old, or older, and if they rebuild the engines, that the bus itself might be old, but if they could put the new engines or rebuild the motors and then a pistons, whatever, it could be okay. And do you have a rule, this 1977 and older, absolutely you cannot use it, or do they have any exceptions?
Chair Buckley, Representative Lim, right, they're not going to be able to use a vehicle that's older than 1977. That rule's in place. They're ready. They're getting rid of them right now. Other than that, we don't have any rules in place. We have been, of course, encouraging districts to upgrade their fleet for various reasons. There were major safety changes to the bus in 1993, particularly the exit requirements. There's more. It's measured by the egress is determined by the number of passengers. Another safety feature was the flammability of the seats. And so there have been some major safety changes in 1993. So I can't tell you what the exact age is. Another one is the ABS brakes. But basically, after 1977, there was a major construction change. A bus has pretty much stayed the same in the last 30 years.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Vice Chair Kopp.
Just two brief questions. Let's talk about those kids. The question I had, are these, what are they called, motor coaches, are they going to be used at a certain grade level? Is it for high school, middle school, elementary?
Chair Buckley, Representative Kahn, we have not put that into the rule.
Uh-huh.
That could be something the state board could still consider, but at this time, we did make a requirement that there would be a chaperone, and we put a definition in the rule of what a chaperone would be. But we have not put a grade level. We've left that up to the district.
Thank you. And the second question is, because those children come in all shapes and sizes, was there any discussion about safety of putting video cameras on the motor coaches?
Chair Buckley, Representative Crum, we didn't put that into the rule. I'm not aware the carrier may or may not have a video camera. When we're talking about the carriers, not the
right.
school buses.
Right.
We don't have a requirement for
yeah.
that.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, one other clarification we should also make, too, is that the use of the motor coaches is not for home-to-school or school-to-home transportation.
Right.
It is strictly for the extracurricular activities. So.
Yeah.
And it is by choice. The district doesn't have to do it.
Yeah. Chair, just a follow-up comment.
Yes, sir.
Knowing how wonderfully anxious and excited most children are going to those extracurricular activities is what prompted my question.
You've been a chaperone.
Numerous times.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it a comfort issue, or why do schools want to use the motor coach versus the school bus?
Chair Buckley, Representative Hoffman, what they say is they would like to use it because it's more comfortable. See, I got to say this politically correct. I think really who's more comfortable is the coach or the teacher. I'm not sure the kids really care. They also say there's a restroom facility, and so when they travel at greater distances, they are able to use the restroom. But comfort, I think that the appearance, it looks better, and they like their team to arrive well-rested. I think there's also some video cameras that they can view shows, and so I think that they think that they can do their homework on these buses because they have lighting that's better, and they list various reasons of why they want to use them.
Okay. Follow up on another thought. Just a curiosity question. If the safety standards improved in 93, why did we adjust at the 77-78? I mean, shouldn't we have just let the 77s remain in service, and at some point then we upgrade them and say nothing older than 93?
Chair Buckley, Representative Huffman, the changes that happened in 1977 cannot be retrofitted. They were construction changes to the roof so that the roof can hold 1.5 times the weight of the bus. It wouldn't collapse in a rollover. Other changes were the way the seats are attached to the floor. The floor is plywood. It's the padding on the back of the seats. These changes, it's the window retention, they can't be retrofitted. Now, some of the things in 93 could be retrofitted. The seat covers could be changed so they met the flammability requirements. They could also add additional emergency exits to the windows if that's what they chose to do. Many states have not allowed the pre-77 school buses, and thankfully Oregon moved that way last legislative session.
There were significant changes
very
between 77 and 78.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question or two, and then a comment. On the question side of it, and if this has already been asked, you can tell me to go back and listen to the tape. but don't motor coaches that carry young people, old people, and people of every shape and size and age, don't they have to meet U.S. Department of Transportation standards in order to be able to be driven on the road? And what is the primary difference between the standards of USDOT with regards to motor coaches and the standards that that either USDOT has relevant to school buses or relevant to or what's the standards that we have different than that?
Chair Buckley, Representative Crummell, this is a very layered answer. The federal government has some rules in place, and then states have rules in place. And as far as construction standards, school buses are regulated by National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Then the motor coaches have another set of regulations. School buses are more highly regulated because of the cargo that they transport. Now, what we do different, for example, let's talk about the driver. School bus drivers can never have more than 31 points on their driving record. And just a quick overview, each citation or accident where they're at fault is worth 10 points. So in a 3-year period, they can't have more than 3. Motor carrier doesn't have anything like that. So that's part of the rule now. So we have elevated the skill and quality of the driver. Another example is the criminal background. I'm not aware that motor coach drivers have any restrictions on their criminal background. And school bus drivers have to be free from custody, probation, or parole for 3 years for a crime that involves theft, violence, or threat of violence. So, I mean, those are the kind of differences. Am I answering your question?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And now with regards to a comment, if I may, the question was asked by the representative to my right about, you know, why is it that they want to, and you're absolutely right. It does have to do with comfort, and it does have to do with the ability to study. When you look at a school district like Pendleton, where the closest place is Milton Freewater, which is 30 miles up the road. LeGrand is an hour and a half drive when you're going up over Cabbage Hill. Everything else around Pendleton is no less than a 2 to 2.5 hour bus ride. And if they're, you know, these teams have to travel, those kids have to be able to figure out when they can do their homework, and sometimes it's at night on the way home. The other thing with regards to the comfort issue is, yeah, it probably is for the coaches, because school buses are built with the seats about this far apart, so if your femur's any longer than about 16 inches, you can't sit in one of the seats, and I think that is a factor. The other thing is the luggage carrying capacity. When you look at a school bus, they don't have the bays underneath where you put the stuff. Well, if you're loading a football team up, you're going to end up taking up a third of the bus, if not more, in the rear of the bus with just their equipment. You know, their own bags plus the bags and things that they use on the sidelines. So when you really look at it from a standpoint of the motor coaches versus the school buses, there's a lot of good reasons why schools will use motor coaches as opposed to school buses, especially for these long types of trips.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Lim.
Okay, thank you very much. This might be some different kind of questions I might have, such as apparently it comes down to the money, funding, to buy new buses, but simply might not have enough money to buy new ones. So my question is, do the each school district have some kind of a savings plan every year going up, and then after 10, 20 years, you might have enough money to do that, or you have to come up all the money at one time? And what is the current policies on that issue?
Chair Buckley, Representative Lim. Now, I love to answer this kind of question. Statutorily, we reimburse school districts for the purchase of school buses. And we reimburse school districts depending on whether they're that 70, 80, or 90%. But most districts get 70% of their school buses. Then by statute, they're to put that money in a special fund. And so we replace a bus over 10 years, and that money goes into a special fund so that they can purchase new school buses. And they can only purchase new buses out of that fund.
Okay. Then one of the questions following up, why do they have to wait 30 years to, why couldn't they buy a new ones then after 20, 30 years?
Chair Buckley, Representative Lim, I think that part of the problem is that Oregon has experienced a lot of growth, and they haven't been able to replace their equipment like they'd like to. The districts that have the buses that are over 30 years old are actually a contracted operation, and they're not a school district, and so I can't answer that question. It's a business choice they've chosen to make.
Except for rent.
But most districts are replacing their fleet.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. So we are going to move on to our next panel, but one quick question on the variance. What's the turnaround time if a district calls up and says, we would like to use a motor carrier? What's the turnaround time of that request?
I'm Chair Buckley. We're doing them almost daily, so they're not waiting. I could say the most anybody's waited is a week, 3-4 days.
Okay.
Well, we got one this morning, and we processed this morning.
So they can fax you the certification of their insurance.
Correct.
And their.
Okay. And if you'll notice that in the final rule, one of the things we did is we put at the very end of it that if they already had a variance, we were going to extend the variance until June 22nd. We didn't want any, since the board would hopefully hear this the last of in April.
Right.
And the temporary expires in April, we wanted to make sure that we didn't leave anybody out that already had one, so we're allowing them an extra 2 months here to continue to operate as the event so that by next year, school year, they should be able to do everything they need to do.
One quick question?
Yes, statement, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I just want to be sure the superintendent, Mr. Allen, and Ms. Lincoln and your staff, thank you from Central Oregon for doing this and allowing this to continue. It looks like you've handled it. We haven't heard all the testimony, but I don't have parents calling me and upset anymore. So. Hope it's working.
You must be doing something wrong.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, just a brief comment for the committee before we leave. Just to remind the committee, it's ultimately up to the State Board of Education, the rule before you that's a draft permanent rule. They'll make the decision whether or not that goes into effect. And certainly we know there are folks that are not pleased with the direction that the State Board has taken and the Department has taken in crafting this rule. But I think that's where the State Board seems to be heading. The vote was 6-1 last fall. And at this point, I would probably take a legislative action to prohibit districts from using these motor coaches. So,
thank you, Mr. Allen. Thank you for your time. That's my appreciation. Tom Welter and Chuck Bennett.
Chair Buckley and members of the committee, I'm Tom Welter, Executive Director of the Oregon School Activities Association. I gave you some information that I think was passed out early this afternoon. I want you to make it clear I'm not an expert on school bus safety. In my 13 years working with the OSA, I have not chartered a bus, and I'm not sure I've even ridden on one. But I would like to present some testimony this afternoon representing the schools that make up the OSAA. We're an association of 294 public and private schools from all across the state of Oregon. Inside the folder that I gave you is a map of all of the schools that make up the Oregon School Activities Association. Each year we sponsor 116 different state championships in 19 different activities. I've listed those for you. Football, volleyball, soccer, cross country. We just had our state cheerleading competitions last Saturday at the Memorial Coliseum in Portland. And by the way, one of the cheerleading squads did come by motor coach. Each year about 120,000 students participate in one of the activities that we sponsor through our association. And basically that's about two-thirds of the students that attend our high schools are participating each year in one of the 19 different activities that we sponsor. As was stated by the previous panel, there are now 54 school districts that were granted a variance to use motor coaches. If you add up the number of high schools in those districts, that totals about 90 of our member schools, which is 30% of the schools that make up the OSAA, have requested a variance to be able to use motor coaches when they see it appropriate. I'd also like to just present a little bit of anecdotal evidence that we have received from member schools since this became an issue last fall. In talking with the representatives from Ontario High School over on the Idaho border, they transport their football team using a motor coach, and as Representative Crummell mentioned earlier, primarily because they can get a 57-passenger motor coach, which can accommodate all the team and all the equipment on one bus. If they take yellow school buses, they're required to take two buses to get the team members and all their equipment, and it's actually cheaper for them to use a motor coach, less expensive than to use two school buses. The Reedsport School District owns its own motor coach. They purchased about 10 years ago, and their athletic director informed me that that bus is used 4 to 5 times per week to transport students either on field trips that primarily come into the valley or on athletic teams for their after-school competitions. Marshfield High School in Coos Bay has used charter buses and motor coaches for the last 18 years. Many of their trips go into the Eugene area, and obviously their non-league competition goes beyond that. And so they use motor coaches on a regular basis. And again, they cited the accommodations with the better seats that recline. Kids can do their homework, and also the extra storage, both in the overhead bins and in the cargo holds under the bus. The Eugene School District uses buses on a weekly basis, uses charter buses to go to and from Medford, up and down I-5 to both Grants Pass and Medford for some of their activities. I've also listed some of, on the map that I gave you, and also a list of the member schools of the OSA and the leagues. And we have six different classifications, and I've kind of cited some of the potential playoff trips that occur during our state playoffs in different activities. A trip from Portland to Medford is about 276 miles up and down I-5. At the 5A level, Pendleton to Ashland would be a trip of about 510 miles one way. And as we get smaller, and you can see from the list of schools on the foldout, we have schools that are all at the same classification level that are significant distances apart. Astoria to Ontario, 460 miles one way. And that actually occurred last year in our basketball championships, where Astoria went to play a playoff game at Ontario. From McLaughlin High School and Milton Freewater to Brookings Harbor, 600 miles, a one-way trip could occur. And again, at the 3A level, Nissa to Warrenton, Umatilla to Gold Beach, all over 480 miles. And so on down to the 2A and the 1A level, Powers High School down in the southwest Oregon coastal area, over to Joseph in northeastern Oregon, 577 miles one way. So what we hear from our member schools is they appreciate having the option, when they get into some of those extended travel situations, to be able to use a motor coach for their students, and I suppose for their coaches. I'd be happy to entertain any questions, as long as they're not technical.
Thank you very much. So, any questions, members? Representative Greenley.
Can I ask a question that's not about buses? I am intrigued with, I worry about kids going over the mountains in the winter. And I'm intrigued with the alignment of 6A7, the Central Valley Conference, that looks like it has Redmond coming over the mountains for virtually every game they play. How did Redmond get into that alignment? I mean, it's sort of East Salem.
Chair Buckley, Representative Greenlick, that was through our classification and districting committee, which did make a little bit of notoriety a couple of years ago. Actually, at the time that decision was made, Redmond School District was in support of that. They traded trips to Hermiston and Pendleton on two-lane highways in the winter for a shorter trip, actually, although over the mountain, to the Salem area. Unfortunately, Redmond is the only school that we have in our association, you know, east of the mountains, that is of their size.
6A.
They're currently actually, I think, looking at passing a bond, and they have tried over the last 10 years to build a second school in the Redmond School District, which would alleviate the issue that you refer to.
Yeah, it also isn't all that different from 5A6. I mean, it's a couple hundred bigger, but there's more difference in the PIL than there is in that.
In response, Chair Buckley,
if I were a parent there, it would drive me crazy sending them over for a basketball game over the mountains on the San Diego.
You know, we've had schools at the lower classification level, and I certainly understand what you're saying. We've had schools at the lower classification level. For example, Sweet Home has gone to Sisters, State and Cascade here in the Salem area have gone over to Sisters for a number of years on that same mountain pass. And again, health and safety of the kids is paramount, and if it's questionable, they postpone the game.
They don't go.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Bennett. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to testify in this information session. Mr. Chairman, without a bill, it's hard to get real specific, but just a couple of general thoughts on this. I measure
kind of the reaction we're having out in school districts, much like Representative Wisnant does. My calls come from superintendents rather than from parents, but as soon as the problem arose with the use of the motor carrier buses, my phone lit up, and I recall one call that kind of illustrated, I think, the problem, and it was from the superintendent in Pendleton, and his one of his teams had headed out for an anticipated game, I assume, in Ashland, and they had arrived in Prineville when word came down that they were not to be using those buses, and it stopped. And I admire Superintendent Keene for having the wherewithal to pull them over to the side of the road, say, don't go another inch, and the yellow buses are on the way. And it is the kind of thing that superintendents, whatever you would decide to do in the future, will cooperate with and take seriously. But I hope, as you look and listen to discussion of this, and the sometimes, I think, blithe suggestion, we're going to go out and buy new buses that will replace this kind of bus for both comfort and ease of use, I guess, recognize that transportation is ancillary to our basic function. Our basic function is education. Transportation, some would argue, well, if you can't get them to school, you can't teach them. Well, there seems to have been historically the ability of children who want to learn to get to school, no matter how hard you made it. It could be uphill both ways in the snow, and kids historically been able to make it to school. This is a function of trying to make this as useful an opportunity for young people as possible who engage in extracurricular activities to not have their educational experience interrupted. And that's how most school administrators are looking at this, that this is a chance for them to participate, but also to be able to study, to be able to sleep. When you're doing a 510-mile one-way, when you're doing a 1,000-mile round trip from Pendleton to Ashland, there is sleep involved. There's just too much time on the road not to allow these kids to get some sleep. And although I haven't been on a school bus, I don't know how long now, it's been many, many, many years. I can't remember falling asleep on a school bus, aside from what seems to be kind of a long-term neck problem from the whiplash of falling forward, because the comfort level certainly isn't there. And you're not going to have kids sleeping on these buses, despite 10 to 15 to 20-hour trips. So I hope we find from the State Department a kind of reasonable solution we all hope is coming. The other thing, I just mention it as an aside, I guess, the concern that superintendents expressed to me was that if you didn't have this kind of transportation available to young people participating in extracurricular activities, what you'd have them doing is going in private cars. It's not going to be the yellow school bus. It's going to be private cars. And those are no question about it. And you hear statistics all the time, and I will rely on my colleagues who are interested, probably more informed on this than I am, to give you the statistics. But by great numbers, it is much less safe for a young person to ride in a private vehicle than it is to ride in one of these kinds of buses. And certainly it's safer in a yellow bus, just sometimes it's not nearly as convenient. And certainly our history of injury to young people is really occurring in private cars, not in either school buses or the kind of buses that are under discussion today. So if there is a bill next session, glad to come in and talk about the specifics. It's a little hard when you're talking about something kind of in the dark. You know, I have seen the pictures on the OSCA website that would indicate there's a fire problem, and I know there are all kinds of stories that can come with this, but I hope you'll understand ultimately the biggest safety issue we face with young people is having them get into private cars, and that seems to be the most common alternative that we run into.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. Any questions? Mr. Chair Comp?
I don't have a question, but just a comment. It hasn't been that long since I've ridden a bus,
You're
a
younger
school
than
bus.
I.
Not much. I've just been in the field a little more recent. But having four daughters that were all athletes, and one of the most ludicrous things I ever volunteered as a high school administrator was to ride the bus with the football team from Woodburn to Sisters and be the only administrator on the way home. But in knowing, and then it got icy. And we did not get home until like 2:30. I mean, it's way after 2:30 in the morning. It was somewhere between 2:30 and 3. And I assure you, we all did sleep. When you have, and what I, my comment is really directed towards the bus drivers. Mm-hmm. I would not have ever been able to sleep if I didn't feel confident in his skills. I mean, he was very careful, and they're the ones that I want to applaud that take the care to get us wherever we need to go in our schools. And the other thing about, the only other comment I make about the students that tend to get in a vehicle, boy, that's what I've seen in my experience is the coach kind of determines those factors, and I've hardly ever been around a coach that says, you guys can get in your own vehicle. They say, you ride the bus. And so it's interesting the impact of our coaches, our bus drivers, and these people keep kids in school. And it's just incredible that they have the dedication to do what they do.
Certainly agree, Mr. Chairman, Representative Comp, your points are very well taken, and we rely on anyone who's driving young people and are very confident that under any circumstance we have the very best.
They really are.
And I think in the yellow buses, there's no question. We have just the best drivers. Our workers in that area are absolutely outstanding. We believe the same is the case in contracted services as well. And certainly the question of private automobiles, there is no question that any coach or any administrator would want to have young people in buses, either
any
type
day.
Of bus.
Any day.
Yeah. At some point, though, when you're looking at a 1,000-mile trip, there are going to be parents and other students who are going to find themselves in private vehicles just for the comfort of it and the ability to sleep and to drive the distance and study, etc. So, we're talking in such a vague way here. I hope if we do talk about this, we'll be looking at something that gives us more specifics to talk about.
Mr. Bennett, Ms. Welton, thank you both very much.
Can I make one last comment?
Sure.
The only comment would be, and it's kind of a pun on myself, that my daughter's coaches didn't want them anywhere around me, so they definitely asked me to be on the bus.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. And the comments about driver safety is very well to our next witnesses, Tricia Smith, Lana Conaway, and George Gottbeut.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association. OSEA, as you know, represents 20,000 educational professionals in a variety of educational settings, including, I'm proud to say, thousands of bus drivers, school bus drivers. And today I'm joined with two such bus drivers, Lona Conaway and George Gottbehewitt, and they're going to give you some first-hand insight into what it's like to be a school bus driver. But before they do that, I would like to give you some of our thoughts about why OSEA believes that school children, when they're being transported by school districts, should be transported in the most safe way possible. If you think about this, it's important to differentiate in your mind what we're doing here. We're not talking about parents choosing to put their own children in their own car. Parents can choose to do that if they want to do that. That's their right. We're talking about what a school district should do with other people's children. Not their own, other people's children. And the Congress, after a series of catastrophic school bus accidents in the early 1970s, passed a law that said that they had to establish construction safety standards for school buses that would protect children from the kinds of accidents that had occurred in the past, including one right here in Oregon. When Congress passed that law in 1974, it was called the School Bus Safety Amendments of 1974. They said school transportation should be held to the highest level of safety, since such transportation involves the nation's most precious cargo, our future. Passage of the law led to the construction standards that you've heard about that were established by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration in 1976 and applied to all school buses that were manufactured in 1977 and thereafter. Those standards, as Ms. Lincoln told you, were upgraded in 1993 to include better exits, better fire protection inside the school bus, and some other issues. All of these standards were put in mind to do one thing, and that was to protect school children in the compartment during an accident. Everything about school buses are designed to protect school children inside the bus. And several of the standards are completely unique to school buses. Motor coaches nor any other vehicle is required to have these kinds of things in their construction according to federal law. And those include increased structural and joint strength to protect the passengers in rollover crashes and to prevent separation of the panels in the bus body and structure. Attached to my testimony, you will see a picture and a news article of a recent rollover motor coach crash in Utah. And please note what happened to the roof of that motor coach in the rollover crash. That collapse would not happen in a school bus because of the specific construction requirements in school buses that prevents it from happening. Another unique construction standard of school buses that isn't included in motor coaches is the unique seating systems in school districts. There's been a lot of talk about whether or not school buses should have seat belts. The federal government is looking at that question right now and trying to determine whether or not it's possible to actually design a seat belt that could be used in a school bus, since school buses transport people who are 5 years old and 18 years old, and they have very different bodies. It's very difficult to design a restraint system, a lap and seatbelt restraint system that protects all children. The ones that exist now actually injure children. Instead, school buses have what's called compartmentalization. Those uncomfortable seats that you all were talking about are designed specifically to keep children from being injured in a crash. They're designed so the children in a crash will move forward into the seat in front of them, which is specifically padded to prevent them from being injured, and then are pushed to the floor as a result of the design of the bus. In motor coaches, they have no such compartmentalization, nor do they have seat belts. They can't be retrofitted with seat belts because the way motor coaches are designed, they don't meet the federal standards for seat belts, so they can't even be retrofitted. And the windows, as you've heard, are those extra large windows, and they are designed without glazing requirements that school district glass windows have. Those glazing requirements in school district buses prevent the glass from shattering, so that not only is the student prevented from being ejected from the bus as they would in a motor coach with the extra large windows, but in motor coaches the glass shatters and those shards often injure passengers, and that would not happen in a school bus. Additionally, there are other federal requirements that are, as I said, designed specifically to protect children inside the bus. The fuel systems must be designed so that it prevents fire in a case of accident. The other picture you see is the one that Mr. Bennett referenced was on our website, and that shows you very clearly what can happen to a motor coach in an accident. They are very prone to fire. School buses are not, because the federal government in its standards recognize the way buses are prone to fire because of the way they're hit and where the fuel systems are, and they have specifically put requirements in place to protect those fuel systems from impact, and that's made a significant difference. All of these requirements, and there are many more, all of these requirements have are something that we can be proud of because we have a heck of a success record as a result of them. Since these standards were put in place in 1976, and since then, there has not been a single child lost in a school bus accident in Oregon. That is an extraordinary statistic. Why in the world would we mess with success? Now, you might be wondering why all of this talk all of a sudden about motor coaches. Some districts would have you believe that we've always used motor coaches in Oregon. What's the big deal? Well, you heard from Ms. Lincoln in a very politically correct way that those districts that have been using motor coaches have been doing it in violation of the law and the rules. There's no other way to say it. It was a violation until this temporary rule went into place. And if they had asked the department would have told them that they may not use motor coaches to transport students, and the reason that they are not legal in Oregon is because they're not as safe as school buses. I haven't even talked about the differences in training and experience required of school bus drivers versus motor coach drivers. I brought my members to tell you some of that. But what I will tell you is Oregon has a long and proud history of protecting its children when they are being transported by school districts, with its laws and its rules meant to do exactly that. Motor coach industry has made a great push in the last few years to go into school districts and transport kids. It's a heck of a market if you think about it. And they are telling coaches how comfortable their buses are. And why shouldn't their football players ride in grown-up buses instead of those kid buses? Coaches, what do coaches know? They don't know about the construction of school buses. They don't know about the training requirements of school bus drivers versus motor coach drivers. They care about getting their team there happy. So that's why coaches shouldn't be making these decisions, because they're not looking at safety. Safety is what we should all be looking at when we're talking about transporting other people's children. And that's what school districts do. And we hope as this issue continues to develop, you'll keep that in mind. I have much more information in my testimony, which you're happy I know that I've skipped.
Welcome. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lona Conaway, and I have been a professional school bus driver for 21 years, the last 19 years in the Ben Lapine School District. I actually live in Prineville, and I travel back and forth. I actually drive a 20-year-old school bus, and I drive that approximately 110 miles a day, and I've done this many, many miles, many, many years. I've also, except for 1 year, taken trips my whole year long. I've traveled many hundreds and thousands of miles and taken many hundreds of thousands of students on these trips. I am with you today because I am concerned about the safety of our students being transported in motor coaches. Although I am retiring in December, I feel it is important to speak out about this issue because we carry the most valuable cargo there is, our people, other people's children's. During my career, what is known now as a yellow school bus driver, I have seen a significant increase in the use of motor coaches to transport our kids to activities, especially the last 3 to 5 years. They didn't always use these buses. Student activities take our kids on the farthest routes and the most dangerous roads. I've traveled them, and I've been in that seat. These dangers should make using the safest bus and the safest driver a priority. Motor coach drivers don't have the same level of training or experience in student management or emergency situations that school bus drivers have. And I'd like to give you an example of a trip that I've taken and considered a very good outcome on that because of my training and experience. A few years ago, I accepted a trip for the swim teams from Mountain View High School and Bend Highs, and this was their district swim meet, and it went to La Grande. It was wintertime, and we left Bend High School early evening. We stopped and picked up Mountain View High School. We were planning to get to La Grande about midnight. A couple of hours into the trip, something flew past me. And I'm thinking, oh, good. My coach isn't handling this. I should be concentrating on my driving. And you let it go for a little bit, hoping The chaperone or coach will get control. It was a toy gun shooting disc through my bus. And I did ask the coach next, please get control and get those guns. The coach was unable to control the student's behavior. He was a new coach, first-year swim coach. The disc began flying around again. My knowledge of the icy pass, which was mentioned, Cabbage Hill, that I would be leaving Pendleton in order to proceed on icy, very icy roads, gave me concern, and I knew there could be a dangerous situation if I didn't get a hold of it. I stopped the bus safely, and I told the students that my job was to transport them safely to their swim meet, which was very important to them. And it's very important to me to get you to this event and home safely. That is my job. And I said, can you imagine how distracting it will be if tomorrow I sit in the stands of your swim meet and plop oranges into the swim pool while you're trying to swim a straight line? I had 5 guns in my hands within 30 seconds, and that's everyone handed them to me. I was very much assured at that time that the safety of my students on that trip was due to the training that I had received and the experience that I had. A motor coach driver does not have this knowledge and experience to draw from in situations like this. Nor are they at a vantage point to realize what is happening. If you've been on a motor coach, you will realize that they sit down very low. As a school bus driver, all but 2 of the years, I've driven either Mount Bachelor's ski bus, which is a motor coach, or in the 7th Mountain buses. At a time that I felt that it was unsafe to drive that motor coach any longer, because even with my training and my skills, I was unable to control the same students I drove on my bus Monday through Friday. On Saturday, Sunday, I was at a lower level without this viewpoint that I could get control. I asked my supervisor if I could please drive employees only, because I was not comfortable with the safety of transporting these students any longer and the behavior that they had. These concerns that the school districts have can be addressed without compromising safety. I've had firsthand complaints from the coaches about the seats not being large enough or there not being lights to see. One week I took a coach who absolutely could not sit in that seat. It was too small. The next week I took a band instructor. He and his wife, and he was over 6 foot tall, sat in the very same seat together, and there was many seats open on that bus that day. They chose to sit 2 adults in that seat. Districts could purchase activity buses that meet federal safety standards and provide more comfort on longer trips. Buses can be ordered with larger seats that will hold up to impact standards set for school buses, and the student is still comfortable. I also believe some of the concerns, such as not having light to do homework, seem reasonable, but in my experience, students socialize, they watch their own DVDs, they play their iPods. I have not seen homework being completed on a school bus on an activity trip.
That's never my experience.
We do have 2 lights in the back of the bus that do not interfere with the safety of our driving, that if a student requested to do homework, they could be seated in those seats. Most of them request that we turn those lights off. Some school districts, including mine, say they don't have enough equipment or drivers to make that required activity trip. During the week last fall, when we adhered to the ruling by the Department of Education that banned the use of motor coaches, we were able to transport our students to their activities using the drivers and buses we have. That week proved we could still provide transportation for activity trips without using motor coaches. You also have photographs from my packet. And by chance, this bus was towed in. As you can see, it couldn't drive in on its own into our area, and I had seen that on Friday. When I looked at the bus, the nightmare to me as a school bus driver is when did it crash, how did it crash, and, oh, my God, if it had been a motor coach, there would have definitely been serious injury to the students in a similar accident. Motor coaches do not have the same side and roof structural support, windows, or fuel system protection. I shudder to think the consequences to the children inside of this type of accident. I take great comfort in knowing that I'm behind the wheel of a school bus. Instead of passing rules or laws allowing the use of motor coaches to unsafely transport our students, we should ban their use entirely. Please tell the Board of Education that there is no excuse for compromising student safeties. Motor coaches cannot be modified to minimum school bus construction standards, and they have no place in our student transportation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Chair Buckley, members of the committee, my name is George Gottbehit. I reside in Junction City, Oregon, and I work as an A-level school bus driver for Eugene School District. I've been a driver for 4 years. As a trained professional school bus driver, the number one concern I have, of course, is the safety of my cargo, which are children, maybe some of yours. And my job is to transport them to and from school and provide transportation to and from school-sponsored events. In recent years, I've seen the steady use of motor coaches in the Eugene School District, only to do activity trips, but we use them. And it's also known by all of us in the field that motor coaches don't have the same safety standards as school buses. But maybe the most overlooked safety factor is the driver. We have the most experienced drivers on the road for transporting students. And when we contract a motor coach as a school district, we don't know who we get for a driver. Hopefully we get somebody good, but it's a crapshoot. So, in Eugene, our drivers are professionals, well-trained. We're trained in first aid, student management and behavior, emergency evacuation, and we're also subject to drug and alcohol testing. And in Eugene, our levels of training, we have what we call a C-level driver, a B-level driver, an A-level driver. And from there, we go to a Blue Star driver and then to a Gold Star driver. Each one of those levels comes with more experience, and more experience possibly in bad road conditions. A Blue Star driver is able to go with a Gold Star driver in a snowy area. Only a Gold Star driver can drive in the snow by themselves in Eugene. So, our most experienced drivers are doing our most dangerous and longest distance trips. And when we contract those trips out, we don't know. We don't feel like comfort should be, or we don't feel like safety should be sacrificed for comfort. And in Eugene, our operations director has done research about having a school bus activity bus that has different seating in it, which is more comfortable, individual overhead lighting, which seems to be an issue, overhead compartments for storage, which seems to be an issue, air conditioning, which not all buses, maybe, I don't even know if the motor coaches all have it, but some of them probably do. Air ride suspension for a more comfortable ride. And all of our trip buses that we currently have do have understorage in them that we take on most of these trips. So there's understorage on most of the trip buses that are taking students. And if there isn't understorage, there's plenty of room inside the bus, less where there are no passengers, that we store equipment and whatever in a safe way, where it's not in the aisle, it's not in an exit area or anything like that. So there is a compromise that can be made as far as the construction of a bus. The issue there, again, is the cost. But they're paying for it anyway by paying these motor coach carriers. They take that same money and supply us with the buses that we need. We could do the job. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? What's your wisdom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you both for your all three of your testimony. And Mrs. Conaway, thank you for driving over the mountain. I hope it was safe.
She's safe.
One of our members of our caucus went over Saturday morning and he got stopped there at Hog Hill, landslide for 2 hours. Yeah. I guess, Mrs. Smith, my question to you is, you were on the committee that came up with these rules. So did you make your position known to those people when they drafted the...
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Wisner, thank you for that question. Yes, sir. I testified before the Board of Education prior to their adoption of the temporary rule. I participated in the work group, and although the work group's purpose was not to discuss whether or not a motor coach rule is a good idea, before I talked about what such a rule should have in it, I made it very clear that we didn't believe that motor coaches were appropriate to use to transport students in school activities. So, yes, sir, I have made it very clear that that's been our position all along.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that the rules, and I think hopefully you professionals too, and I thank you for your service and looking after our children, but I think that the rules we've come up with now, we are requiring the driver to have some qualifications and certification and background checks, and so we are... The rules you've come up with have addressed that concern, which is good. Would you agree?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, once I had stated our opposition to the rule in itself, I felt that it was important, given the reality, we were told very clearly that this was going to happen. So given that reality, we thought it was very important to participate in discussing what the appropriate requirements of a motor coach and a driver should be in that situation. And we, for example, suggested that a district chaperone should be on the bus with the motor coach driver, since there often are hours and hours in an activity trip when students are on the bus alone with a driver, unless there is a chaperone. We also suggested training requirements and of drivers. Some of those are included in the proposal, but I would suggest to you, sir, that even with those, they do not equal the training requirements of school bus drivers in student management and in emergency situations and a variety of other things. So even with the requirements in the rule, and I have to say I do appreciate the department's determination to try to put as much control as they can on a private carrier, even with those controls that are in this proposed rule, we don't believe they're adequate because it's not possible to make the bus safer, and there is not as much training required of drivers as we require of school bus drivers. And if we think it's important for a school bus driver when they're transporting students, why in the world would it be less important when they're transporting the football team, which also happens to be students?
Members, I do extend to know we have two more witnesses who have come a distance to testify. I'm going to stay until 2:45. We can still use the room for anybody else who can stay. Your presence is appreciated. Quick follow. Do you guys both want questions? Representative Wisner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Real fast. The activity buses in Mrs. Conaway's presentation, do all schools have those, and has this activity bus been modified as the gentleman talked about? Anything different about the activity bus in this one? Photograph.
Mr. Chair, we don't know whether or not all schools have activity buses. I can't speak to that. I haven't
known. Don't have any buses been specially modified for longer trips.
I don't know whether or not school districts have had the ability to purchase buses that meet federal safety standards for activity vehicles that do have those construction standards within them for a couple of years, and I don't know if any of them have. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Greenman.
Yeah, very, very briefly, and I do need to leave. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Is this an economic issue? I mean, in the sense that, is it cheaper for a school administrator to hire a bus than to send their own existing buses over the road? I mean, is that the motivation?
Motor coaches are more expensive to purchase and operate. For hire, motor coach companies require a profit margin. We understand they are more expensive, not less expensive, than operating a school bus and a school bus driver.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you.
However, Mr. Chair, if I may just point out, as was pointed out by Mr. Welter, if you have a situation where you can take a 57-passenger motor carrier and all of the gear and everything that has to go underneath can go underneath, or an overhead bins and that sort of thing, versus a 44-passenger bus, activity bus, or whatever that's the school bus that can't, doesn't have the underbelly for storage and the upper case, so you're using part of your seating for carrying stuff. I'm not so sure that two buses is cheaper than one.
Mr. If I can ask on that question, do you have access, or was there access to financial information from the districts in terms of the costs of? Do we have a comparison that we can make? A district that has used motor carriers and a district has used the yellow school buses?
Mr. Chair, I'm sure we could make that comparison. All of that information is public, and we could do it. We haven't done that kind of research. On Representative Crummell's point, I will say that we are unaware of a 57-passenger motor coach. We our understanding is they are somewhat smaller than that, and we do have school buses that are quite a bit bigger than that.
Thank you very much. I do want to get to our other witnesses. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks for coming here today to be with us and give us the information.
Be safe going back across the fence.
Be safe. Joel Yoder and Sue Miller. Thank you so much for your patience. It's a important topic, and I wanted to make sure the committee members had a chance to fully ask the questions and to hear from people like you. So please proceed.
Chair Buckley and members of the committee, my name is Susan Miller. I've been a school bus driver for 27 years, and I have 0 points on my record.
Good on you.
For 14 of those years, I was a designated state driver trainer in California. I started out driving because our school needed someone to transport the band. They didn't have a driver, and they had a need. They saw that they didn't want to contract out. They wanted to keep it in-house and keep it within the personnel that they had. We deal with a multitude of driving issues besides road, drivers, weather, on a school bus. We deal with smoking, alcohol, drugs, and even sex. The construction of our school buses is configured to allow the maximum view of all students. Charter buses allow for no visible ability to supervise the children while they're seated. You cannot see anything because of the high seat backs, and they do not offer the safety on impact the school buses do. Some charter buses even close their restrooms on trips because they cannot supervise what's going on in the restrooms. As has been stated before, the seats are configured to take the impact by being padded and spaced, and a visibility for supervision. One of the big issues I have is with the seats. In California, many years ago, there was an accident. A team was coming back from a trip. The kids seated in the buses didn't have any supervision to where they were sitting in these high back seats because the driver can't see. So they turned around and they laid on the floor, they sat backwards, the bus rolled, the windows went out, which school bus windows don't go out, pop out. The children were, one girl was thrown out the window and rolled over by the bus and killed. Her her mother immediately started a petition to get school seatbelts on school buses. What ended up happening with that is they didn't put the seatbelts on the school buses because Canada has many studies on how that's not feasible to even try to do. But she did get the law passed that no school student can be transported to and from a school-sponsored activity on anything but a school bus. We have been given a host of classes dealing with problems on the school bus. First aid classes, which I'm not sure that the charter bus drivers have are required to do that. Seizures, epilepsy, gangs, hijacking, terrorist attack, weapons recognition, body fluid hazmat classes, mat classes, which teach you how to deal with body holds, hair pulling, biting, restraint training. Many of our drivers are mountain trained also. Every year we have training on some aspect of dealing with the students on that ride our buses in our in-service classes, and we're required every 4 years to have a defensive driving class, which is a six-hour class. Plus, constantly throughout the year, we are having many classes offered to us in how to deal with pupil management. The picture you saw of the bus on fire, I did have a fire on my bus one time going up to the mountains in California. It was an engine fire. I managed to evacuate 43 students and two adults without any incident because of the back emergency exit that I had, because the front of the bus was on fire. The police, the firemen came, gave me an A-OK for approval on that. I also was hit by a driver going 40 miles an hour in a school bus in the rear end. The child that was sitting at the point of impact didn't even know that we had hardly been hit. The lady embedded her windshield up to the front of my bumper. Her and her two children went through into the window. And when the policeman asked her, why did you not stop? She said, I didn't see the yellow bus. So we're pretty visible. The attitude of the school bus drivers is one of safety and concern. We pride ourselves in being prepared and ready for all issues and problems we face each day. Many times we take the extra effort and time with students because we are school bus drivers and not hired for special events. I would like to take this opportunity, with my director's approval, to invite you all to come out and drive in one of our brand new Cadillac buses. We have several new buses that have the storage that goes from one side to the other. I have taken a team with four buses and two box vans, went to Everett this year with the band, Century Band High School, and the coaches said, we can't believe how wonderful these buses are. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bus that you just described with all the under luggage and stuff, is that what's been called an activity bus? Is that a new style, or what are we talking about?
It does go on routes, but it is probably put out there more for the activity buses than anything else. We have mountain buses. We have in-town buses. We have trip buses, and it is one of our better trip, our brand-new trip bus. And I do drive a 20-year-old bus over 100 miles a day, and it's just wonderful.
I'm sorry, your school district again is?
Hillsborough.
Thank you. Please.
Good afternoon. Chair Buckley and the committee. My name is Joel Yoder. I drive for Hillsborough School District. I'm not as experienced as Sue is, but I've been driving. I drove in college to help pay my way. And I loved it so much that I decided to continue it after I retired from being a graphic designer. Everybody has pretty much said everything that I had notes on, but I'm just going to give you my little highlights anyway, so that, because some of these highlights may touch home. I went to bed reading this. This stack of papers that Sue gave me on what's required to be a school bus versus another kind of a bus, and my eyes were spinning when I woke up, and I wrote down just a simple kind of a sentence, but safety features are intrinsically available to a school bus that are not to a motor coach. It may sound a little simplistic, but everybody's been talking about the big yellow bus. Big yellow buses are tough to miss. And part of that being tough to miss is also they're required by law to have a certain value reflective tape put on the fronts and the sides and the rear so that you can see a school bus cross in front of you, you know, hundreds of feet away. You may not see the bus. You may not see the sign. Speaking too loud, I guess. You may not see the bus, but you'll see the tape. And you'll know that, and it says school bus on there. And that's another thing that's intrinsically there that may not be on another type of transportation. Another thing that we have, at least in Hillsboro, on all of our buses, we have, and it was mentioned before, video cameras. These video cameras are great for student management. If they know that there is a possibility that their mom and dad might see what they did on the bus, that's a great incentive to, not do the sex in the back.
Yeah.
And that's, there's probably been more than, I've heard more than one story about that. They're good for control, but they also give you a handle on what you need to do to improve yourself. It's not there just for the kids. When you watch those things, you know that you've done something wrong and that you should have been able to prevent it, and it's a learning tool for you. You may not like it, but, you know, these things are there for us to learn.
The video camera, are there monitors in front of you? Or what?
No,
what's
the video camera is just a camera that's...
Okay.
Sometimes it's out of sight, but there's a sign that says you may be video camera.
Okay.
And then if you request, then they'll take the... now, they used to be VHS, now they're discs. So take that out, and they'll review the problems.
Gotcha.
And... everybody learns. It's not very easy sometimes to learn that you did something wrong. Glencoe recently had a waiver granted to them. Glencoe High School was traveling south. I didn't follow the team this much this year, but they were going to state playoffs. And there was a waiver granted to them to get a motor coach. And red flags went up, at least around our district and the transportation. In our contract, because the district has recognized the safety features of the yellow buses and the experience that comes with the people that drive those buses and all of that combined together, there's an agreement which states the district shall not contract out any... These are Sue's notes, I'm sorry.
The
district shall be committed to utilizing the transportation department for Tier 2 activity trips as deemed necessary and appropriate for effective district operation and safety. So we took this into consideration, and we talked to the people who wanted to get the motor coach, and if they had followed procedures, they may have been able to get the coach. But since they didn't follow procedures according to our contract and district, then we went with a safer bus. And I truly don't think that's why they lost. But you know, they might lead you to believe that.
Sure, my apologies. I'm going to have to ask you. Do you have one way to wrap it up? Any last statement you want to make to us in terms of?
Yes, I do. If I can find it, it was earlier on.
There, yeah.
In closing, I believe that motor coaches are more of a matter of flash than of safety of our children. we change rules to provide for the convenience rather than increase the safety.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank
very
you
much.
So much.
Thank you for your work. Members, thank you for your patience and staying with us. Thanks to all who testified on this issue today. Let's keep the conversation going. With that, we'll close this hearing.